I remember many, many years ago when I was doing research on in African history, I used to teach African history and culture a number of years ago. And one of the very interesting observations that I came across by a researcher who looked at the geography of the Atlantic slave trade in Africa, in that it was always coastal. It was always around the coast. It never really penetrated into the center of Africa. And the reason why is because of the tsetse fly, the sleeping sickness, and whatnot. And so the slavers would send Africans into the interior to bring Africans out as captives for the slave trade, because the disease zone of the tsetse fly or other kinds of sicknesses kept Europeans on the coast. And so, of course, Africans were susceptible to these things as well, as you mentioned. But that's one aspect of the global health. Another one is very interesting. We never got a submission. We tried for this book from a person that does work, kind of a growing area of work around global health. This has to do with the critique of the global health paradigm, and that is how military crises or disasters, natural disasters of various kinds, end up operationalizing a huge global health response, usually from the global north, and from NGOs of various kinds and various kinds to these disasters. And what ends up happening, according to the people involved in this kind of critique of the global health paradigm, is that they end up pathologizing the communities that they're sent to help. I mean, you kind of alluded to it as well about how the global north views and continues to view Africans. The same thing happened, by the way, with the earthquake in Haiti. We saw the same kind of pathologizing of Haitians. But the idea, there's also a critique of NGOs' responses, medical NGOs' responses to disaster areas, because of the way in which some of them from the global north pathologize the communities they're sent to help. So I mean, there's two sides to it, or a number of sides to it.
And so, I'm hearing definitely that, which I think is absolutely true, that while Fanon tried to start or was a part of a movement in the 50s and 60s as decolonization was happening, which he was himself actively involved in, and the Front Libération Nationale in Algeria helping to decolonize one of the French colonies in North Africa. But that even though he started a movement to fight against this global health paradigm where the global north, you know, think Western Europe and the United States, gets to tell the rest of the world basically what health standards really are or should be, and gets to say what's healthy and what's not, that those colonial mindsets actually still pervade in our health understandings today. I mean, another prominent example I was thinking of is I read a paper a while back about, and hopefully I can cite it when I go home and edit this more properly, but I read a paper about the birth control drug Depo-Provera, and how it was deemed back in the 80s and 90s, they were doing research and, you know, there was during the AIDS crisis, and they thought that part of the problem that HIV was spreading so rapidly in Africa was because the global north, I should say, you know, white Western European scientists thought of the global health community, thought that it was spreading so rapidly because of the old trope of overpopulation, that they didn't have a sense of when to, in the white Western European mindset, they didn't have a sense of how to manage population, which is obviously has a very deep ingrained, you know, horrible sense of almost viewing people like animals as they're breeding too much, quote unquote, which is obviously horrible. But they deemed drugs like Depo-Provera, they would test them on the poorest and most vulnerable communities in Western Europe or in the United States, for instance. They tested them on black women in Atlanta, Georgia. And of course, people reported horrible side effects. And so drugs like Depo-Provera were banned because of these side effects in in Europe and in the United States, but they were deemed fit, even though they had horrible documented side effects,
right.
They were deemed fit for use in Africa and in other communities of the Global South, because it doesn't matter, according to the, you know, Global North, the people who are in charge of setting the health paradigm. And so this is just another example of certainly these colonialist ideas pervade. But so can you speak more, though, to... So Fanon in the 50s is a doctor practicing in Algeria. And can you speak more to what leads him to develop like his criticism, his critique of the global paradigm that he saw at the time? You know, this paradigm that still exists of colonial attitudes towards health in all of our communities.
Well,
what does he see that leads him to develop this critique?
Well, there's some things that are quite specific to Algiers. Franz Fanon was a psychiatrist. He came to, after graduating from the University of Lyon and doing his internships, he ends up being the director of medicine at the Bleda Joinville Hospital in the outskirts of Algiers. And in 1953-54, the Algerian Revolution begins on All Saints' Day in 1954, and a number of the Algerian freedom fighters would be wounded or would suffer from torture or would suffer from other kinds of things and would find refuge at the hospital. And Fanon would take care of him because he was also a surgeon. In France, to be a psychiatrist is kind of not like it is here. You also get trained to be a surgeon. And so it's in that capacity that he joins the FLN, the revolutionary movement. And one of the things that he runs into when he first comes to Algiers is the so-called Algiers School of Ethnopsychiatry. And it's a white supremacist paradigm in psychiatry. It's called the Algiers School. Kind of forgetting the Perot was the head, P-O-R-O-T, Antoine Perot is kind of the head of the Algiers School. He's a French, I think he was French. He might be French Algerian, but I think he was French. And he and his son pretty much, and others, promote this Algiers School in which they view Algerians as Fanon mentions in Wretched of the Earth, as lacking any kind of cortical function in their brains. I mean, it's like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And Fanon attacks it in that view in Wretched of the Earth, but when he comes into the hospital, this is the major hospital, you know, mental hospital, hospital in Algiers, in Algeria, and he has to deal with the Algiers School of Psychiatry. And so a lot of what he did in the first couple of years is to really just deconstruct and critique and tear down that whole framework of mental health care that he ran into. There are stories, and it seems like they're true. I mean, there's a couple documentaries now about Fanon in Algiers that kind of, with people who had been patients there, people who had worked there. And apparently it is true. I mean, he kind of carries out what seems to be this mythical thing that's associated with Peniel, who was the famous French psychiatrist who opened up the prison doors of the asylum, where French patients back in the 18th century were actually imprisoned in jail cells, and he talks about flinging the doors open and letting the patients out of their prisons. And Fanon is thought to have done almost something similar to that. I mean, patients were chained to their beds, all kinds of things like that. They were constantly being restrained in various ways due to various kinds of agitation. that he argued came from the environment that they that the asylum or the hospital represented as a colonial institution. I mean, you can't forget that the hospital that he was the director of was a colonial institution. It was run by the French colonial government. He was a, you know, a French colonial professional, almost equivalent to a civil servant. And so he had to challenge that in any way that he could. Thus, he saw and used psychiatry politically to make a case that as against what the French socialist government said at the time, that France, that Algeria is France. Matter of fact, that statement comes infamously from Jacques Mitterrand, who was a later president of France, who was socialist. Fanon, through his work, showed that Algeria is not French. And one of the things I write about in the article that I write for the book is I kind of track Fanon's clinical papers where he does work on two mental health wards. One is a Muslim men's ward. The other ward is a European women's ward. And Fanon actually had been educated in radical therapy called sociotherapy or institutional therapy. And he was taught that in France, around Lyon, at by a Spanish psychiatrist by the name of Francois Tasquales, who had fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Was exiled himself, right?
And so he starts this thing called institutional therapy, in which they essentially try to humanize the asylum, the hospital, clinic, and make it more social, make it seem less institutional and more like the society in which it's in. And so Fanon took that type of therapy with him to Algiers and applied it in this one case, and it didn't work. It worked in the European women's ward. Because again, you're it was, what society are you trying to make the asylum into? And the society they were trying to make the asylum into was a French society. Whereas the Muslim men's ward, that didn't work. So while this asylum had become more humanized in many respects and removed many of the restrictions, it was still one whose cultural framework was French. And as he says, it failed. Their attempt actually failed. And I call it a creative failure. An intern, a young woman who had interned with him, is now a much older person. She's still alive. Alice Cherky wrote her own book on Fanon. It's one of the better books on Fanon, I think. I think it's the best book on Fanon. And so she gives real insight into, you know, because she was there on the wards, in the wards. And she argues that it failed on purpose. And that he intended it to fail. He wanted to show that Algeria, when you put an Algerian social framework in an asylum for the Algerians, they don't respond to it,
right?
And whatnot. And so Algeria is not French. is the point. And so he says later on. Actually, it's from her book when he's talking to one of the young interns that interned under him, and the guy's asking him about, you know, how this this quote unquote experiment went, and why it happened. He says that's because psychiatry has to be political, and so he was using psychiatry politically as a way to decolonize both the practice of psychiatry and taking that further. As his mentor later said many years after Fanon had passed away, that Fanon pushed the limits of the boundaries of psychiatry beyond the clinic into society and into the movement.
Yeah, one of the themes that stuck out to me was you and the other authors who are examining specifically Fanon's clinical practice in Algiers talk about how one of the tropes that the Global North had taught him as somebody who trained as a psychiatrist in France, he had been taught that you need to isolate patients, that you need to keep them separate from one another, that you need to cut them off from their social relations to the outside world, outside of the hospital or the clinic, that you need to isolate them, and so all there is the doctor-patient relationship, and that's the end of their socialization. And so Fanon, of course, gets in there and discovers, well, that is not working, it's making people miserable. And so that's one of the things that stuck out to me, is he gets in there and he forums, you know, all these social clubs, he encourages people to keep writing letters to all their family members. He even gets in there and says, he critiques even the location of where the hospitals are built. At one point he says, listen, we got to stop building these medical wards, these mental health wards out in the middle of nowhere. No wonder people aren't feeling well about themselves. They're isolated completely. But yeah, that really stuck out to me that he had that emphasis. So would you say that was another way of him trying to decolonize the institution, was to get rid of that sense of individualism and restore the sense of, you know...
Yeah, of the collective and of the society. And yeah, and by the way, that experiment, which was actually the research done by his the intern that he partnered with in doing it, that though the attempt to use sociotherapy, which essentially recreates a French environment on a Muslim men's ward, although that failed, he went back and reassessed. And in one instance, it was only by accident that one of the nurses saw one of the Algerian patients take a shovel and go out the door. And they followed him and found out he was helping some other patient actually dig a garden. And they found out that, oh, that's what they would prefer to do. They also created a cafe where they had coffee and they listened to radio, because that's what Algerian men do and whatnot. And so they went and tried to find the different, they went and studied Algerian culture to try to, and then brought what they learned from about Algerian culture into the clinic and made it culturally responsive to Algerian culture. And so they just rearranged. They used to bring in Algerian folk tale tellers and whatnot, bring in Algerian singers and whatnot, and even the Algerian women and the Algerian women patients responded to that kind of thing. And so it was that, rather than just saying sociotherapy as an abstraction and essentially making French society normative for everybody, which is what essentially colonialism does. France is much more nuanced in its colonialism. It's very cultural. They really sought to, in the end, learn, and then incorporate Algerian culture. The other thing that they did that I think is very profound and is often missed is that the staffing at the hospital, of the attendants and the nurses and nurses' assistants and those kinds of positions, were often Algerians from the community, and he raised them up. He made a very important category of them and help to train them so they could actually be licensed and whatnot. And he was very sensitive. He said what they might lack in knowledge, in medical knowledge, they make up for in empathy.
Yeah.
Because they have an understanding of the culture and they have an understanding of the people. And he made that an issue. I mean, it wasn't just some kind of platitude. He actually raised that to a level, near or commensurate with that of being of the skill level of other professionals.
Yes.
And so that was, and so that when he started developing these satellite clinics and annexes closer to where people live, those kinds of things. It was in order to involve people from the community in helping others who needed mental health services.
Yeah, and I mean, what struck out to me too is like the commitment to, because I mean, we're talking about the colonialist medicine, the colonialist global health paradigm that Fanon was trying to fight against in the 50s. And I think one of the other elements of that colonialist global health paradigm that, I mean, we still see today, but that was especially pointed in colonial situations was, you know, the way that they, and this is what Fanon talks about in his political writings, Too Wretched of the Earth and Black Skin, White Mask, about how it makes people, it decerebralizes them, you know, makes them literally brain dead, particularly colonized peoples, Black Africans. It decerebralizes them in the sense that it makes them reactional only. It makes them not actional or people who act first. They can only react to things, you know. You really see that in the medical profession, where people are, you know, it's all these passive words that happens to people. They never have any say in it. They're clients of doctors, and they're diagnosed, inspected, drafted, tortured, neglected. You know, all manner of these passive words are what doctors would use to base the entirety of their practice on. And it's just fascinating to me that Fanon had this different sense of, no, we actually are on the same level in a way with our patients, and we need to, you know, we're all in one society, and we need to be giving them mental confidence in themselves. And I don't know if you can speak more to that, too, like the ways in which, especially with Black identities, the ways in which he tried to give people who had been othered by colonialism, you know, a type of self-confidence, again, in a way, through his clinical practices. Does that make sense? It's a roundabout way of asking the question of how did he try and restore, you know, through his clinical practices, the sense of confidence, of you know, you talk about an affirmative Black identity rather than this reactional one that the Europeans bestow on people.
Yeah, you use the term decerebralize people, and that was a term he used in his letter of resignation in 1956, December 1956. He resigned. He wrote a letter to the resident minister, who was also the governor general of Algeria, saying, because he was a French civil servant, he had a, you know, he was professional, and so he sent his letter of resignation and explained why he was resigning, and he says that a system that decerebralizes the people is one that has to be replaced. He said it's a non-viable system, and so right in his letter of resignation, he was making this very radical assessment of colonialism from the point of view of its impact on the psyche of the colonized. He wrote a book. He wrote a third book, a middle book called "Dying Colonialism," as well, between "Black Skin, White Mask" in 1952 and "Wretched of the Earth" in 1961. He wrote "Dying Colonialism," that was published in 1959. The idea of affirming the identity of people, of colonized people, is one that goes back to Black Skin, White Mask. I wrote or co-wrote another book called Frantz Fanon, Soweto, An American Black Thought. And in that book, which is more a pamphlet, and I say pamphlet on purposefully because it was a treatise that was part of the movement. It was written to be part of the movement at the time. We wrote the first edition of it in 1978, and it was at the time of the Soweto uprising in South Africa. So the book was called Frantz Fanon, Soweto, An American Black Thought. And I'm very proud to say that the book circulated in the underground and the movement in South Africa. And Steve Biko and the Black Consciousness Movement had taken from Fanon's Black Skin, White Mask the idea of self-consciousness, one becoming conscious of oneself as an authentic and person, as against what apartheid did to people. Biko took from Fanon the idea of self-consciousness as a revolutionary force, that becoming conscious of oneself mobilizes individuals into organized groups and whatnot. It's what happened with us in the 60s as well. We called ourselves Black Consciousness too. That's when Black became a thing as against being something negative. So consciousness of self, going all the way back to Fanon's graduate student days when he writes Black Skin, White Mass. It's incredible to think that the work was written by as a graduate student.
Well.
But and that goes all the way through his work. That is that how the individual becomes conscious of him or herself as not only authentic, but as dare I say, a revolutionary subject, someone who can take charge of their own lives and change their life and their environment and community around them.
Which goes back to what I was saying, too, in the sense of the medical profession at the time that he saw was all about taking the agency away from people, and all that you could do, or all that happened to you if you were a patient, which I think speaks to his frustration and why he quit, probably, was all that the medical profession would do to people is it would they could never be subjects themselves. They were always objects of doctor sentences. They would say, oh, you have this disease. That's your identity that I've given to you now.
Right.
You have no agency in crafting your own identity, which I think, you know, those ideas of, you mentioned the word authenticity too, is a very inauthentic way to live your life when doctors are telling you, especially when it's French white doctors telling, you know, colonized peoples around the world that, no, this is your condition, this is how you are. It's a very impersonal relationship. We were getting into the sense of talking about collective consciousness, too. And, the experiences of forming the cafes, and I was curious about if we could talk more about the idea of national consciousness that Fanon thought was really important for people to develop. He says, Fanon writes that, quote, national consciousness, instead of being the all-embracing crystallization of the innermost hopes of the whole people, instead of being the immediate and most obvious result of the mobilization of the people, will be in any case only an empty shell, a crude and fragile travesty of what it might have been. The faults that we find in it are quite sufficient explanation of the facility with which, when dealing with young and independent nations, the nation is passed over for the race and the tribe is preferred to the state. And he later writes that to address these shortcomings of post-colonial states, political education is required to, quote, make the totality of the national reality to each citizen, to make the history of the nation part of the personal experience of each of its citizens. And so my question was, a mouthful, yeah. My question was, how did raising national consciousness, in Fanon's view, contribute to global health? Is it more of that affirming identity, that a positive identity, even if it's, you know, because as a leftist, one thinks, even reading Fanon's writings, you have to be very aware of the pitfalls of a simple liberal nationalist movement, that it can only go so far, which is clearly what he's saying, but he also seems to think that we need to take this, that developing a nationalist consciousness at all is a great first step towards something better.
Yeah. It's a very good question, Nick. A lot of people don't really catch that dialectic. He says that if national consciousness doesn't become social consciousness, it leads up into a dead end. Later on, I think near the conclusion, the end of Wretched of the Earth, he talks about national consciousness, which is not narrow nationalism, is the only thing that can give us an international perspective. So he was critical of nationalism, or national consciousness that just goes as far as nationalism, but doesn't turn toward social consciousness. Mm-hmm. And he also calls it a humanism, that he's calling for a new humanism. But when you read it closely, he's saying that you, however, cannot skip over the stage of national consciousness. Mm-hmm. But if you just get that far and go no further to social consciousness, then you end up in a dead end. And the people who want to skip over the national consciousness stage, mm-hmm, and go straight to social consciousness, or you get people who only, you know, who stop, as many of them did in Africa, stop at the stage of national consciousness. And it's in the chapter in Wretched of the Earth on the pitfalls of national consciousness. And there he just really dissects the post-independence reality of the national leader, the national party, the national bourgeoisie, and whatnot, and how they get stuck. He's one of the first people to use the term neocolonialism.
Yeah.
For these states. That's why it's very interesting when you look at the reception to Fanon, or the continuation of Fanon. I mean, there's a gigantic Fanon industry. A lot of people writing on Fanon all over the world. But it's interesting that pretty much at the time that Wretched of the Earth came out, both in Africa and the Caribbean, Fanon was persona non grata in a number of newly independent African states because of the critique that he left at his death, both in the Caribbean and in Africa. And thus the biggest reception to Fanon, the biggest audience for Fanon, was here in the United States in the Black Power movement.
I mean, it's interesting to me because it almost seems like, to take a Fanonian analysis of like a modern African state, like say Kenya, who I think Jomo Kenyatta, to my mind, has always served as one of the chief examples of this type of purely nationalist figure who went, you know, no further into developing a more holistic social consciousness. But, like, you can take a modern African state like Kenya and, you know, now they have that conservative party in power under, what's the name, Uhuru Kenyatta. And it seems like you would almost the correct way to analyze that situation is to say, is what Fanon would say, is maybe they never actually achieved a whole national, like they didn't actually have the full national consciousness step. It didn't pervade. He writes that it needs to pervade like the mindset of each individual.
Right.
And so it's weird. It seems weird to me today, you know, if you go out and tell somebody on like a leftist on the street, like, yeah, the problem with a lot of post-colonial states is they didn't go far enough in their nationalist phase. Mm. It seems like a weird thing to tell people, but it's almost what Fanon is saying, or would say about.
No, I think you're right. I mean, every nation is different, but I mean, it's easy to say that, well, they didn't get to the stage of social conscious, but in many cases, they never got.
Fully through into the national
state. But the thing, coming back to his psychiatry, in a certain sense, an embryo, he often refers, particularly in Dying Colonialism, and also in Wretched of the Earth, he would use this expression, the reality of the nation, the new reality of the nation, And he's looking at the germination of a new national reality right within the breakup of the old colonial one. Mm-hmm. And there's it manifests itself in all kinds of ways. And I think in his own way, first in Algiers, and later on he goes to Tunis, he had to get out of Dodge. He had to get out of Algiers. Literally, they were coming for him. And so he goes and he moves his practice to Tunis, Tunisia, which had just gotten its independence. And he attempts to create a microcosm of that new reality of the nation within the clinic, in a certain sense. What is the lived experience of people, what does the lived experience of people look like when it is free of colonialism? Can the clinic be an institution or an instrument of decolonization or decolonized space and whatnot?
Yeah.
And I think in a certain sense, that was what he was doing in microcosm. Now he had larger projects in terms of actual national development, particularly economic development, which is frankly no one writes about in looking at Wretched of the Earth or some of his other work. But his brother, Joby, his older brother, who wrote a nice memoir about him, was an agronomist on the island of Martinique where they're from. So he had all kinds of ideas about economic development. The faction within the FLN that Fanon was associated with, which is the more radical faction, led by a man by the name of Abeni Ramdani, who was a Kabyle, not an Arab. And he and Fanon and others were much more taken with what happens in terms of economic development after independence. And so there's a whole dimension of Fanon's writing, particularly in Wretched of the Earth, that looks at economic development in post-independence Africa that really hasn't been addressed much or engaged with much, that I think would be helpful too. In order to go to that, to make that move from national consciousness to social consciousness, what were the material foundations for that? And again, this work that he and others were doing around economic development in Algiers and other places, Algeria and other places, would be the foundations for going to that social consciousness. Sure. And so, again, it's odd, maybe not so odd, given who kind of writes on Fanon, that is rarely ever developed or analyzed in his work.
Yeah, and it just seems, again, it's going to make me say a sentence that seems weird to say as a leftist, but it seems like Fanon really emphasized in his writings too, now it's really important actually to have a strongly developed middle class that can carry out this type of nationalist liberation movement, provide no matter how liberal it might be at first. Mm-hmm. To at least create some of the economic and material foundations for this psychological transformation to happen, for a collective consciousness to build.
Well, it's you know, he was scathing in his critique of the national middle class.
Yes,
but,
yes.
You know, to be sure. I mean, he used pretty strong language, but I mean, he really thought that the basis of development would be the peasantry in the rural areas.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in Africa. I mean, what else is it going to be? You get into some interesting areas in looking at what Fanon actually said versus what people perceived him to say. I mean, many in the United States, in the Black Power movement, particularly the Panthers, the Black Panther Party, I mean, it's almost as if they read Wretched of the Earth and they hadn't gotten beyond the first chapter on violence. And so there was I guess it wasn't much of a debate back then. It has since become a debate about the Panthers taking from Fanon the notion of the lumpen proletariat's role in the revolution, because that's one of the things they're said to have taken. And so there's a lot of reassessment of that going on. The idea of social, economic, and political development that he deals with in Pitfalls of National Consciousness, Chapter 3 of Wretched of the Earth, is where a lot of countries in Africa still are. To this day, I mean, they really really haven't gotten beyond that moment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. To kind of close things out, can I ask? I mean, you've been studying Fanon clearly for decades at this point. Is there? Do you have a certain personal, is there something about Fanon's story and his writings that resonate with you very personally, you know, that have led you to study him for so long? Are there any, like, personal stories that you really remember, like, distinctly his writing just impacted you or hit you right at the right time in the right place, and that's why you've kept studying for so long, or?
What I appreciated about Fanon early on, I mean, I've read Fanon almost every year since I was a senior in high school, mm-hmm. and that was 1968. So I've lived with Fanon, but I think, and I've kind of, you know, every now and then I go back to kind of your question, you know, what was it about Fanon? And I think it was, as a young black intellectual, I saw the power of ideas, the power of theory, because it's often overlooked, because there's kind of a hyper, whatever, about practice. And as my mentor says, not by practice alone. You just can't have a revolution just with practice. There has to also be a theoretical framework. There has to be theoretical preparation for revolution. Otherwise, again, you end up a blind alley, dead end. And so I saw in Fanon someone who saw the power of ideas, or what Marx in the preface to the first edition of Capital called the power of abstraction, which is, I always love that. He says that the scientists, that physical scientists have microscopes and telescopes and all kinds of instruments, but social scientists, the instruments we have are ideas, the power of abstraction. Mm-hmm. And so you see that in someone like Fanon, and this new Fanon that we're now discovering, now that the clinical papers, yeah. There's a new 500-page book that just came out of formerly unpublished clinical papers of his and other writings, including political speeches, two plays, by the way, that he wrote, letters. We're discovering a new Fanon. A whole new generation of folks will see a new Fanon that, you know, we never saw. And so it's generating a tremendous amount of scholarship around the world. I mean, all over the place. I mean, we tried to get a scholar from the West Bank to write for our book. Unfortunately, he couldn't because he had some family issues at the time, personal issues. But we're still in touch with him. We mention him. There is a Frantz Fanon University in Somaliland, it's in the northern border of Somalia. Hussein Bulhan is the founder of it. He's one of the few people who's written a book on Fanon psychotherapy. In the book, we have a piece on a Somali community in Toronto, Canada. We have a psychiatric nurse in Australia. We have Roberto Beneducci, who started a Fanon Center in Turin, Italy, to help immigrants coming from North Africa and the Middle East using Fanonian therapy. We have Dr. Lewis King, who started one of the first Fanon centers in the world in Los Angeles back in the early 1970s. I actually spoke there myself. Whatnot, it no longer exists, but he was the executive director of that. We have a guy who, two authors, principal author, is the director of the NYU Bellevue Torture Survivors Center, and dealing with torture survivors of torture. And he wrote a piece on it. So we have people from a lot of different communities and others, including here in Champaign, Urbana, Imani Bazell, who had a radio station here in Champaign, called Access Live, who did all kinds of public service work around mental health issues in the community here in Champaign-Urbana, and used the Fanonian framework. I was often on that. And Helen Neville, my co-editor, and I were often on that radio program talking about mental health issues, particularly around at the time of police shootings of young black men, both in this community and other communities, and how black communities were dealing with the trauma of police violence and brutality. So we try to get a good cross-section of people who are doing work using a Fanonian framework to do that work. That's what we want. And it's, a book like this has never been done before. I mean, everybody kind of does a kind of discursive, including myself in the past, a kind of discursive reading of Fanon. You know, everything is discursive now. But the people who, you know, we ask the question, who's actually using Fanon in their practice. And what are the issues? You have a young white psychiatrist, clinical worker, who works in a rape community, rape crisis center. Powerful piece that she did in terms of situating herself as a white clinician dealing with a black woman, actually a LGBT woman, who had to deal with the trauma of rape and whatnot, and how she used Fanon's work. And so it has a lot of interesting case studies that I hope people will get a chance to read.
Well, Lou Turner, thank you so much. The book again is Explorations in Mental Health, Frantz Fanon's Psychotherapeutic Approaches to Clinical Work Practicing Internationally with Marginalized Communities. It's edited by yourself, Lou Turner, and Helen Neville. So thank you so much for being on Radical History Reviews.
Thank you, yeah. Nick, for having me.
Always a pleasure to get to speak with my friend, Dr. Lou Turner. Again, his book is Frantz Fanon's Psychotherapeutic Approaches to Clinical Work Practicing Internationally with Marginalized Communities, which he co-authored with Dr. Helen Neville, who is also at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. I hope you're all able to check out the book. Thanks for listening. I'm Nick Goodell, and thank you for joining me for this episode of Radical History Reviews on 104.5 WRFU Radio Free Urbana. WRFU is an open forum for the community, and the views I have expressed here do not reflect those of the Urbana Socialist Forum, the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, or WRFU 104.5.
WRFU LP Urbana. That means that we're just making this up.
You walked in, time tripped on his feet. Spilled my drink, heart skipped on repeat. You laughed first, I forgot how to breathe. Now my friends keep dragging me from the scene. Every time you say my name, I'm spinning. Like the room's in fast forward, we're winning. Face to face, can you feel this heat? Tell me that you're falling too for me. I just wanna shout your name till the whole world knows, knows, knows it running through my veins. I can hold this love, I showed hands up in the air. Wanna reach you in the sky tonight. I just wanna shout your name, shout your name. My whole life. Ice cream on your lips, messy hair, but you still look lit. Take my hand, we're dodging all the lies. Little jokes turn into stay in the night. Every time you say my name, I'm shaking. Like my future just woke up awakening. I knew I can, you feel this spark. Baby, we're a firework in the dark.
language. We grow, we grow. No limit if you're all in. I'm in it. Yeah.
But my heart always tries to keep keep hope. If I don't remind it to forget this, well, it might stay behind in Memphis. Oh. Told our stories as treble conversed with the bass. The rhythm painted our glory, and the blues described our mistakes. How my heart always tries to keep hold, and if I don't remind it to forget this, well, it might stay behind in Memphis. Oh. Drove away the next morning. I'd already stayed too long. The journey gave no warning that a part of me would never come home. How my heart always tries to keep hold. It fought with my mind, so I left it behind with a boy in Memphis.
I can't get over you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I just want more of you. Just daydreaming with an ocean view. Hoping that this message in the bottle gets to you. Forever missing you. Say that this loneliness has gotten the best of me. Can't look in the mirror, cause the pain is all I see. Reminiscent of love that you gave unconditionally to me. Now this house is not a home, cause you were my family. So I'm taking this time to reflect, as this void in my heart that's making me never forget about you. I really apologize for not treating you as a prize. Just feeling myself a little more than average. I wish I could make a time go backwards to fix the mistakes I've made and erase the childish games I played. You were my sugar to my lemonade. I'm just left with a sour taste, thinking about my baby. I can't get over you. I just want more of you. Just daydreaming with an ocean view. Hoping that this message in the bottle gets to you. Forever missing you. I never imagined me being alone. Needing you as someone to call my own. Now it's
and disconnect when I call your phone. What's the key if he's not willing to share his throne? Baby girl, please come back home. Missing you forever.
Yo, this is 50 Cent.
Hey, it's David Guetta.
What's good? This is Nicki Minaj, and I'm in the mix with
DJ BJ Quad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know it's real.
That's what I feel. Listen, baby.
You mean more to me than anything. Goldie, you're my darling, and I say that boldly. In a world of fleeting shine, you're that one forever truth I find. Started from the pavement, looking at the stars, counting every blessing, healing all the scars. While they chasing paper, running away from the ground, you're the only anchor keeping me on the ground. I see the social static, the noise on every screen, but you're the clearest picture in this frantic scene. Clearly building something solid, brick by heavy brick. The chemistry is heavy, the rhythm's moving quick. No temporary feeling, no season, no parade. Just a light that's constant, never gonna fade. Never gonna fade. It's more than just the surface, more than just the glitz. It's how you hold the pieces when the world just quits. Yeah, you're the one, the soul inside the song. The reason why the journey doesn't feel so long. Look at how we move, focused on the climb. Never gonna fade. It's more than just the surface, more than just the glitz. It's how you hold the pieces when the world just quits. Yeah, you're the one, the soul inside the song. The reason why the journey doesn't feel so long. Look at how we moving, focused on the climb. They talk about the greed, but this love is the only currency we actually need. I'm reading through the comments, seeing all the hate, but we're just over here deciding on fate. You're the heartbeat in the sky, the soul inside the wire, the missing half of me that makes the vision whole. Talk to them. I will never again be cold when the lights go dark and the we go home. You're the sanctuary I can call. The physical frame, you're the spark that turned into a permanent flame. Feel my heartbeat thump and feel the truth ignite. Guided by your spirit through the intimacy of the night. So hot, so
bye.
I feel I'm better on the other side. I'm all good already, so moved on, it's scary. I'm not where you left me at all. So, if you don't wanna see me dancing with somebody, if you wanna believe that anything could stop me, don't show up, don't come out, don't start caring about me now. Walk away, you know how. Don't start caring about me now.
My body's Bonfire crackling, stars in the sky. Res breeze blowing while we hold out it high. Friends all around, we laughing in the dark. Speakers booming with that old school spark. Couple smokes passing, couple stories being told. On a dog of songs in the embers of the cold. And there she goes, her eyes glow like a flame. Wanna tell her now, but I can't say her name. Just a night on the res, no lie. Moon so bright, you can see our love and shine. Our hearts beat loud, yeah, we're feeling that urge. With my family by my side and our souls on the verge. She's the one that I've seen a million times before. Now she dancing barefoot on the red dirt floor. Can't fake the fates when our hearts and minds are light. Tonight that red love and it's one of a kind. She moving like the drums in the powwow beat. Every step she takes makes my heart skip three. Told her my name, she smiled and said, cool. I say I'm from South Bend, just down from the school. We talked till the fire turned low to a glow. Shared tales of pain that only res kids usually know. But we laugh too. There ain't no pity in the game, just the pride in our blood and strength. And just a night on the res, no lie. Moon so bright, you can see our love and shrine. Our hearts beating loud, yeah, we're feeling that urge. With my family by my side and our souls on the verge. She's the one that I've seen a million times before. Now she dancing barefoot on the red dirt floor. Can't fake the fates when our hearts and minds are light. Tonight that red love and it's one of a kind. So welcome to the Lions Den, where everybody's a friend. Feel the love and extend from the beginning to end. Rum, whiskey and gin to a never-ending grin. Everyone smiling, it's 3 a.m. and the party's wildin'. I'm bringing everybody together, no matter the weather. I try to be better and better, sing a loving endeavor forever and ever. I'll sever the pressure when we kiss. I caress her from a whisper to pleasure, cause my linguistic skills be wildly clever. Toast to the fam, to the land we defend, to the warriors before us, to the nights that never end, to old friends and new and the whole rest crew, to the girl with the laugh that can heal all wounds, to the rest that raised me under the sun and moon. I ain't rich in gold, but I'm heavy in love, feeling blessed from Mother Earth to the stars above. Yeah. Typical night in the res, no doubt. We vibing so hard with the 1 o'clock out. Memories made in a sacred place. From my brothers, my angel in the res, nice grace. Typical night in the res, no doubt. We vibing so hard with the 1 o'clock out. Memories made in a sacred place. From my brothers, my angel in the res, nice grace. Hey.
Say you wanna see me. You said you're in my city. Claiming that you miss me.
Get off my phone.
You talking like you feel me. Does it really feel me? That bottom must be empty.
Get off my phone.
You hitting my line when you out with your friends. Trying to brag about money, put me in his Benz. This game does nothing but he claimed that he is.
Boy, you ain't a baller, can't get to the rim.
Que lo que quieres conmigo? You are the one that's falling off, boy.
Que lo que quieres conmigo?
Calls coming straight to my voicemail.
Que lo que quieres conmigo?
You are the one that's falling off, boy.
Que lo que quieres conmigo?
Calls coming straight to my voicemail.
You hit
him
the line when you out with your friend.
Son las 3 de la mañana, sé que tú me quieres también. calls coming straight to my voicemail.
Que lo que quieres conmigo?
You are the one that's falling off, boy.
Que lo que quieres conmigo?
Calls coming straight to my voicemail.
Say you wanna see me. You said it in my city. Claiming that you miss me. You talking like you feel me. Does it really feel me? The bottom must be empty.
On demand. Every day I swear I need a brand new plan. Running low, running thin again. Trying to keep my cool, but you test my zen. I pray for strength when I feel spent. Every promise breaks when my calm gets bent. You got me counting breaths again. Try not to snap in the end. It runs through me like blood in my veins. Still somehow I'm empty again.
Patience, patience.
I'm always running out with you. No matter how much I hold inside, it slips away like it always do. God grant me serenity tonight before I lose what I'm trying to save.
Patience, patience.
Feels like I'm begging every day. Like a spark in a storm. I don't wanna fight no more, but peace walks right.